Hi, everybody. My name's Patricia. I'm an alcoholic. I was at a meeting. Well, first of all, Kevin, thank you for asking me. It really is a privilege. I see at least four people here. Can you hear me?
No.
I see at least four people here that have done this before, and I really thank them for being standard bearers and setting the stage for this. Gives me a lot to live up to. I was at a meeting last week on Avonia Road, and my cousin was speaking, Pete, and he started by saying, quoting what Lois Wilson said, when she, they asked for a moment of silence, they asked her what she did, and she said she invites God into the room. And, you know, I believe that God is in the room, but I'm just, since I didn't say my usual prayer beforehand, let me just take a minute to honor him, if I might. Thank you. The books I'm going to refer to tonight are basically the big book, The 12 and 12, A New Pair of Glasses by Chuck C., and The Soul of Sponsorship, which, if you haven't heard of that one, that's the story of Father Ed Dowling, who was Bill's sponsor. And before I start, I just want to put a little color on my idea about the steps. The big book says, here are the steps we took, which are a program of recovery. And for me, the steps are the program, the entire program. I had to do the steps, I needed the steps, I wanted to do the steps. And so what I'm going to share with you is really all I know, which came from other people or the rooms. I like when my sponsor says, I don't know much, but if you call me, I'll call you back. And that's kind of where I am too. If you call me, I'll call you back. And I often think of people that, you know, when you ask them how they are, and they say, hanging in. You know, I've said that myself, but there's people that chronically say, how are you? Hanging in, hanging in. I wouldn't stick with the program if I was just hanging in. That wouldn't be enough for me. I had to be happy, and as a result of this program, I am a happy person most of the time. Doesn't mean that terrible things don't happen, but working the steps, I think I'm pretty happy. And so, you know, if you ask me how I'm doing, I hope I say super and not hanging in. I'd like to talk for a minute about the condition that I found myself in when I came into the fourth step. I still virtually had all of my character defects after 1, 2, and 3. With one big exception, and that one went away. Kind of think about it, if you're Catholic, the difference between mortal sin and venial sin. I still had all the venial sins and most of the mortal sins. Only one really had gone away that was a direct result of my drinking. I was very polite to people when I came in. When they talked about the steps, but I was still skeptical when I got to the fourth step. But I looked around me and I saw that people were doing well, and I wanted that too. I was not drinking. I was going to a meeting every single day. I had a huge amount of willingness, I think. There was one, I had only one child when I came in. He was almost 4. And I had a nanny, but she was off on the weekends. And I remember one weekend, I couldn't find a meeting. And so I had to go down to Mount Vernon, New York, to a group called Sobriety Unlimited. And my son was sleeping at the time, and I wasn't sure where it was. But I put him in the car seat, and it was pouring rain. We drove down there. It was a very bad part, like just around the Bronx. And I drove up and down the street, finally parked at a parking meter. I remember walking down the street carrying this four-year-old, which is a heavy kid, and a purse, and an umbrella, looking for the address, and finally finding the meeting and going up. And it was a meeting where beginners were not allowed to speak at all, nothing. If you wanted to ask something, you had to write it down, put it on a piece of paper, and put it in a basket, and maybe they might choose your question to answer. But I just remember how kind everybody was, and how they gave me a bologna sandwich, and they gave my son a bologna sandwich, and I felt good about going, because I had really gone out of my comfort zone to go there. And I thought that I had a lot of willingness, and I did. And I guess it was because I was so sick beforehand, both physically and emotionally, and was feeling better. And so, you know, I was happy to go. I still, when I got to the point of the fourth step, I still had a lot of anger. I had that flash in the pan anger. I still had a lot of irritability with people. I was not able to handle frustration very well. I was still controlling. I was still very fearful. At that point, I was only working part-time, so I was able to go to a lot of meetings. I used to congratulate myself on being sober, and I used to tell my husband that it was a result of my good efforts that I was not drinking. I mean, and I believe that. I really couldn't see that it had nothing to do with me. But I was still having reactions of, my first reaction was, oh God, I need a drink. You know, that was a common reaction. I didn't act on it, but that was a common reaction. My sponsor told me very strongly to get all the booze out of the house. And I said, you don't understand, I have these fancy parties, I have all this really good liquor, I can't just dump it down the drain. And she kept insisting and insisting and insisting, so finally I put it all in the trunk of my husband's car, who drove into Manhattan every day to work, and it was an hour drive in. He's one of these people that drives really fast, and then he gets to a stop sign and he sits on the brakes. So for 1 year, he drove with all those bottles in the back. He would hit the stop sign and it would go clunk, 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 clunk. You know, I was willing to get him out of the house, but I wasn't willing to throw it out. So that was the point that I reached, made a fearless and searching moral inventory of ourselves. I told you last week I was a college professor. And so one of the things we do when we teach is we tell them what we're going to tell them, we tell them, and then we tell them what we told them. And so what I'm going to say is when I did the fourth step, why I did the fourth step, and how I did the fourth step. There won't be a quiz at the end, though. I think I was the first person in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous who wanted to do the fourth step, who went to my sponsor and said, I want to do the fourth step, and she said, no. Now, my sponsor was a very formidable woman. If she walked in this door right now, every head would turn and follow her in. She would sit right next to the speaker, no matter where she was. You know, it was like she was at the right hand of God. And she was the editor of the local paper, and she spoke in these declarative sentences. She was objectively mean to me, you know, so mean that her husband would drop off boxes of donuts on my front porch because he felt bad for me when she was my sponsor. Yeah, she was not interested in the world, according to Patricia, at all. And, you know, I said last week, I'm not afraid of a lot of things like in the world, but I was kind of intimidated by her. And when she told me not to do the fourth step, that I wasn't ready, I think she was right. And I think what happened is she sponsored a lot of women, and two women who came in at the same time as I did, she had put on the fourth step. And I was very competitive, and I thought, why are they on the fourth step and I'm not? So I went to her, I said, I want to start the fourth step. She said, no. No explanation, nothing, just no. And then about 6 weeks later, she said, okay, I want you to do your fourth step. And I never asked her why. You know, I pretty much did what I was told. So why we do it comes from the big book, page 58, where it says, "Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover." We read this. Didn't we read this today? Okay. Well, I don't need, you all know it. But anyhow, it says three times in there, honest, honesty, honest. And, you know, you have to be honest. And it says, rarely have we seen a person fail, blah, blah, blah. The traditions actually puts a finer point on it. Tradition 9 says, unless each AA member follows to the best of his ability our suggested 12 steps to recovery, he almost certainly signs his death warrant. Now, that doesn't say he's going to lose his health, you know, he's going to get psoriasis or anything. It doesn't say he's going to lose his house or his family or his job. It says he's going to lose his life. And that, you know, that's about as to the point as it can be. So being an academic, when it said searching, moral, and fearless, I had to study those words right away. So searching was thoroughly scrutinizing, don't leave anything out. I prayed for that. You know, I just said, dear God, help me not to leave anything out. Moral, I knew had to do with principles of right and wrong. And I really believe when you're sober, you kind of know right and wrong. You know, at least I do. I feel in my gut if I've done something that isn't right. And fearless, well, that doesn't mean to me that you do it without fear. It means that if you have fear, you do it anyhow. And that's how most of the steps were for me, and most of AA is. You know, there's some fear, but you just do it anyhow. I was afraid. I was afraid that I wouldn't do it right. I was afraid that my sponsor wouldn't like me after I did the fifth step with her. I was afraid someone would find it, and that someone was my husband. And I really wanted to do it perfectly. You know, I wanted to do it so perfectly that people would be at the coffee pot talking and saying, did you hear about her fifth step? It was a spiritual masterpiece. You know, and that newcomers would come up to me and say, tell me how you did it. You know? So basically, you know, I think I had rigorous honesty. I was thorough, it was exhaustive, it was accurate, and it was meticulous. It's not enough to just say, you know, you name it, I did it. That's just not the fourth and fifth step. The fifth step says the exact nature of our wrongs. And, oh, I didn't bring the book with me, but Chuck C., A New Pair of Glasses, he, you know, he talks a little bit about there. I don't think I brought it. Oh, yes, I do have it with me. Thank you. Thank you, Mary. He says, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. We write. The book says very, very specifically that it's good to write the things down. We're more apt to do it right if we're writing. It takes a little longer, but it's good for us. So we write. Chuck C. had a phrase that I always liked because I identified with it so much. He said that he was like an electric wire without the coating on it. And that's how I felt too, that I was just always raw and exposed and, you know. So the big book goes through, you know, you've all read it, the columns. You can't really do it wrong if you do what your sponsor tells you. And how I chose a sponsor was, took me a long time because I used to sit and listen to women at meetings and I'd say, oh, that one doesn't meet my standards and that one doesn't meet my standards. And I was getting pressure. So I finally chose this one woman and honest to God, if she, you know, if Patton General Patton couldn't have managed, for some reason, the debarkment in France, in Normandy, this woman would have been a good second choice. She was like, unbelievable. I hope she doesn't listen to this tape. She was a major domo in AA, and she was perfect for me. She did not tell me to do it like the columns in the big book. The first column is, who are you mad at? You know, who upsets you? Institutions and resentments. And that's easy for all of us. You know, we all know exactly. We could all sit here and go through them. The second column is, what did they do to you? You know, what's the charge? And that's also very, very easy for most of us. But it should be simple. You know, it doesn't have to be like a book. You know, even old Mr. Brown in the big book was only 19 words. So it doesn't have to be too long. The third column is a little bit more difficult. What fear did that cause in you? But the book tells us what they are. And so it's just a matter of going down and thinking them through. You know, is it security? Is it self-esteem? Is it financial insecurity? And then the fourth was, what part did I have in it? Some of the things that I wrote, I clearly knew what my part was. Others, I needed my sponsor's help to identify what my part was. And sometimes you hear some groups will add a fifth column, which will be, what should I have done instead? Why the fourth column is important is that's the information that I needed to change. You know, I needed to know what my part was. And I can tell you that the fourth and the fifth step were just the beginning of seeing my part. I just wasn't clear enough to have a clear understanding of what it was. And the rest of the steps, 6 through 12, are really based on 4 and 5. And the eighth step, the list, comes from step 4. Although, honestly, I think, you know, if people were important enough for you to put them down in the fourth step, you probably remember them when you get to 8. I had a woman in the rooms who I admire, and she used to say that the rest of the steps are just about growing up. That's all it is. There are other ways to do the fourth step. You've probably heard of Clancy I from the Pacific Group. Clancy's dead now, but at the time, he was 93 when he died, and at the time of his death, he was sponsoring 170 people. And he would give people 7 questions to do, and then he would put them in his car, and he would drive up in the mountains of California, and they would read their responses. And that's how he did the fifth step with them. And I was able to get my hands on his questions, which I think are really good. His first question is, in looking back over your life, what memories are still painful, are still guilt-ridden, are still dirty? 2, in what ways do you today feel inadequate as a person? 3, who do you resent and why? Be as specific and nasty as you can. 4, what do you consider being your defects of character as you see them? 5, what do you conceive to be your ongoing problems in your human relationships? Wherever you go, you get the same reaction. I have a good friend in AA who got sober in Washington, D.C., and she uses the simple charge to her sponsees. She said, write about people, places, and things that cause you recurring trouble. What my sponsor did, and this is how we did it, really, in my group in the 80s and 90s. Nobody did these columns things. What we were told was to go back as far as you can remember autobiographically and write down everything that bothers you. And so that's what I did. In my opinion, people at that stage of writing the fourth step are either in one of two directions. They're responsible for every harm in the world, or, you know, it was everybody else's fault and they played a very small part in it. I don't know anybody that was really balanced. I was the latter. You know, I thought I had just a pretty good character, you know, I did a few things that were basically responses to what other people had done. page 47 in the 12 and 12. And I'm going to take a little liberty with this. I thought conditions drove me to drink. And when I tried to correct these conditions and found that I couldn't, to my entire satisfaction, my drinking went out of hand and I became alcoholic. It never occurred to me that I needed to change myself to meet conditions, whatever they were. The 12 and 12 also talks about we also clutch at another reason for not doing the fourth step. And I love that word clutch because it like means we hold on to it so hard. And that is that the same thing really, that other people were the major problems in my life rather than me. So when my sponsor finally gave me the go-ahead, I got a big sheet of paper, you know, a big tablet, and I got a little notebook like police use, you know, when you see them in these shows, you know, they open it up and they write down things. And I was at that time taking a course at NYU in New York City, and so I would take that little notebook with me on the train, which was like a 48-minute train ride, and I would write things in code in that little book. And then when I would get home, I would transfer them in, you know, full English to that notebook like that I had. It took me a few weeks. I also, just because, you know, I wanted to be that coffee pot person, I also got a Hazleton guide, which you can get online for $5, you know. I found it kind of long and tedious. And then just to put the icing on the cake, I listed the 7 deadly sins. And I found out that I was repeating things. And that's how I knew I was done. Because I was starting to say, well, I already talked about that. Well, I already wrote about that, you know. I did write my part, but there was still a lot of blame, primarily at my mother and my husband. You know, my mother took up a lot. She was 1A, 1B, 1C, 1D. And when I think about it, I was really pretty much of a victim with my mother. And I had to come and learn in AA that if I stayed a victim, I was never going to heal. I was just going to be in that crap forever. So it was primarily resentments and my reaction to them. And I did point a finger at myself, and for that, it was the beginning for me of forgiveness towards my husband and my mother. Because I knew that I had done things that were really crappy to them, to both of them. And if I wanted to be forgiven, then I knew I needed to forgive them too. And I'm not going to tell you that my relationship with my mother, like overnight, was better. I had to do, my brother and I both, we had to do what's called the 30-minute rule. We could be around her for 30 minutes, and then we had to leave. And that went on for a couple of years, you know. And now, you know, my mother's 100. She's in an assisted living. And I go over many evenings, and I just sit there, and I give her the gift of time. You know, I just listen to her. And I have absolutely no resentment or hard feelings towards her. I also, with some people, had to practice the Jackie Kennedy rule of how she dealt with the press. It was minimal information, maximal politeness. So there were some people that I had resentments, I saw my part of it, but I really wasn't ready to be best buddies with them. So I would do minimal information, maximal politeness. I had surprisingly little to no financial issues. And that was no grace on my part. It was because I was really too afraid to steal anything. Even at my job, it was the opposite. I didn't pad my expense accounts. I didn't submit them because I was afraid that the internal auditors would look and see all that booze on my expenses and somebody would raise some kind of flag. And so I would just pay for them myself. There was a lot of guys on my fourth step. There was a lot of temper issues. There was a lot of lying to my husband, who I was with, where I was, what time I got home, what time I left work, you know, all of those things. After I did my fourth step with my sponsor, my fifth step, she asked me to go back and do another fourth step on just my mother. She never explained why. I wouldn't have dared ask her, honestly. I just did what I was told. I was also had a Catholic priest who was working at the same place that I was, and he was in the rooms. And so being a, you know, a lapsed Catholic, I thought, well, let me do my fourth step with him, and that'll be like confession. So I asked him if he would hear my, you know, my fourth step, and he said yes. And we set a time 2 weeks away, and that was the worst thing in the world because I had 2 weeks to worry about it. And then I kept thinking, are we going to do it in my office or his office? Are we going to do, will I close the door or do I leave the door open? You know, I mean, I focused on all the wrong things because I was so anxious about it. I'm still learning. You know, when it says that column where you learn about yourself, I'm still learning about myself. Most of you know that my husband died in November. I was out of town, and this is a guy who was perfectly healthy. He played tennis a couple days before. You know, he and I had gone into the opera. He had gone to a Knicks game two nights before with my son. And we spoke, we had a wonderful relationship as a result of these rooms. And we spoke every day on the phone, three or four or five times. And I called him first thing in the morning and no answer. And so I waited 15 minutes. I said, oh, he's probably in the shower. He's probably in the bathroom. 15 minutes later, still no answer. By 10 o'clock, I was on my way to the airport. And I called my son, who was working in Manhattan. And I didn't want to scare him, but I said, you know, I probably forgot that Pop had a car appointment or something, but do me a favor, leave work and go up and check on him. So I was waiting to get on the plane, and I was pacing up and down, and my son called my cell phone. He said, Mom, Pop's dead. He's lying on the bathroom floor. And, you know, the whole time I was pacing around, I was saying, dear God, let him be okay. But I was adding, if it be your will, if it be your will. And so what I've had to learn now is to how to be vulnerable. You know, I had no idea how to be vulnerable. I could be in charge, I could be strong, but being vulnerable is part of being human. And it means really saying where you are. And I'm still learning that. That's a hard one for me. Valentine's Day was especially hard. He knew the program very well. You know, he went to a lot of meetings with me, and he was not an alcoholic. But he used to say to me, you know, I'm the only one that knows all your character defects, all your assets, and I still love you completely. You know, I mean, how much better could you ask than that? My poor behaviors around financial issues were not like stealing money. It was that I did not have a sense of partnership about money. You know, I worked most of my married life. My husband worked. But it was like his money is for necessities. My money is for extras, you know. Or I used to tell my son, Dad's job is to put money in the bank, and Mom's job is to take money out of the bank. I viewed my checking account as mine and his checking account as ours. So I was really, I had no concept of what it meant to be a partner. And, you know, he put up with it. I would have never done that, but anyhow. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrong. Okay, so I'm going to tell you when, why, and how. The big book on page 75 talks about the benefit of doing it with a sponsor. When we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We waste no time. We have a written inventory and we are prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner that what we are about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. So the best reason for doing the fifth step is if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Invariably, they got drunk. And I love the way the 12 and 12 complements the big book. The 12 and 12 says, all of AA's 12 steps ask us to go contrary to our natural desires. They all deflate our egos. When it comes to ego deflation, few steps are harder to take than five, but scarcely any step is more necessary to long-term sobriety and peace of mind than this one. It's like, you know, the dentist has to drill before he can fill. You have to get all that crap out before you can fill. My favorite paragraph, I know every week I have a favorite paragraph, but my favorite paragraph this week, I guess it's like my favorite speaker, it comes and goes. Depending on whatever. Evan. The great fact is just this, and nothing less, that we have had a deep and effective spiritual experience which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. So, well, the big book gives four suggestions on who we should do it with. It says we should talk to the right person. It says you can talk with someone ordained by an established religion. That's a good choice. You could talk to a closed-mouth friend, perhaps our doctor or psychologist. I have to laugh at that one. You know, my doctor sees me in 15-minute blocks, you know, with my clothes off. I mean, I can't imagine what she would think. And family members, but it cautions don't describe anything that may hurt them. Where I disagree with the big book, and this is probably the only place I disagree with the big book, but when I put it in context, I understand where it's coming from, where it says, notwithstanding the great necessity for discussing ourselves with someone, it may be one is so situated that there is no suitable person available. That's what I disagree with. If that is so, this step may be postponed. I don't agree with that. Only, however, if we hold ourselves in complete readiness to go through it with the first opportunity. And in the context is that, you know, AA was founded in 35. The book was written in 39. At that point, we had a group in Akron, we had a group in New York, and we had a group that had migrated from Akron to Cleveland. So there weren't many sponsors around. Even 4 years later, when they took a survey, there was only 100 alcoholics. So I could understand why at that point there may not be enough sponsors. But today, I certainly don't think so. I'm happy to do a fifth step with any female. 12 and 12 says, okay, when we talk about why we do it now, the sense of isolation and loneliness. I could not believe that I was lonely. That was hard for me to believe because I was busy all the time. But then I came to see that, you know, I could be, even in a room full of my close family, I could be lonely. You know, I was apart. I didn't really feel I belonged. When I did it, I finally felt I was part of you guys. It was the beginning of a relationship with God. Well, it wasn't the beginning. It was a continuation of the beginning, really. I got the feeling I could be forgiven and that I needed to forgive others. It was probably the first step towards humility. I saw my character defects, most of them, and that is really the first step in removing them. It was the first time I was really honest. The big book says your sense of relief will mount minute to minute. That did not happen to me. I was just happy to get it over with. One thing that has happened is that it has changed. It was the beginning of the change of my views of my childhood. You know, I thought my childhood was way over here terrible. And the longer I'm in the rooms, the better I see that my childhood was. You know, how it is in my head and how the story of it went is getting closer and closer, you know. And that's a good thing. That's a really good thing for me. So how did I do it? I made an appointment with my sponsor. I put it in the glove compartment on the way over and locked the glove compartment. I didn't want to be in an accident and have somebody find it. It was a cold winter day. It was about, I had about 8 months in the rooms. I went into her house. She had a bowl of popcorn and a glass of iced tea. I handed it to her. She proceeded to read it, and then she kept scrunching up her face like this as she was reading it. And finally, I got up the courage to say, "What's wrong?" And she said, "I can't read your writing." I did not try to justify or explain anything. She would not have permitted it. She told me that she had done a lot of the same things. And at the end, she told me I was a garden variety drunk. And I did not like that one bit. Because to me, that was like some plain old zucchini bean or string bean in the garden. I wanted to be a hybrid something or other, you know. I did not want to be a garden variety. I still had a lot of ego. It was the beginning of the end of isolation. I got feedback from her, which was very important. I saw some of my patterns. I saw anger patterns. I saw self-esteem. I saw that I had no healthy relationship with men at all, ever. And most importantly for me, my sponsor had my history. So that when I would call her about the problem du jour, I didn't have to go back to the beginning and say, "This is what happened, and this is the background and everything." We cut right to the chase. And also in my group in New York, you're not allowed to talk unless you've done the steps. And so now I was able to talk at fourth and fifth step meetings. My experience as a sponsor hearing fifth steps, I had my first sponsee when I was a year. And we usually do them at my house in the kitchen or in the living room, and I always have an empty chair there, and I say that that chair is for God, because, you know, we're doing this for, we're giving our fifth step to God too. Of course it's confidential, I mean that goes without saying. I always personally come out a better person after hearing a fifth step, although honestly I can't remember, you know the sponsor's prayer, right? God, let there be something different. I be sure that there's no interruptions, no phone, nobody in the house. Somebody told me one time that she did a fifth step with a woman, and the husband kept coming in and saying, "Are you done yet? Are you done yet?" I just thought that was horrible. I try to identify the patterns for them. I do feel very strongly that alcoholics, most alcoholics are people who were really criticized their whole life. And so I try very hard, because that is one of my character defects too, of being critical. I try very hard never to criticize anybody. However, on the other hand, I believe very, very strongly in being honest, because this is about saving somebody's life, you know. And I'm not going to tell you, "Oh, they're there," or "They were wrong," or, you know, I love you enough to tell you the truth. Even if you're not my sponsee, if you say something to me, you're going to get the truth. Because I don't want you to go out you know, I take this program very seriously. And anyhow, that's how it is with me. We in Larchmont, we burn it. That's what we do. You know, there's some school thought that you keep it and it forms the basis for your A step, but we burn it. You know, I had a woman one time, I heard her fourth step in August in my living room, and so we started the fire, we put it in the fireplace, and then I realized I forgot to open the flue, and the smoke was pouring in, and the smoke, and I thought, how am I going to explain this to the fire department when they come, what I was doing? I ask sponsees to speak with other women who are getting ready to do their fourth and their fifth, not specifically about what's in their fourth step, but just about the process. Because I found, you know, I have a point of view, and you get so much more if you listen to other people who've done the same thing. You get other points of view. Now, next week is going to be 6 and 7, and you do that. Oh my gosh, look at the time. No, hardly any time for questions, Kevin. Sorry.
Apologize to them.
You do 6 and 7 the same day as you do 4 and 5, as you do 5. It's my feeling that if you do a good, honest, searching 4-step, you don't necessarily need to do another one. You can pick up whatever comes along in 10. Okay? That's coming from somebody that my sponsor asked me to do another one on my mother, and I did one with a Catholic priest. But honestly, I feel now I don't need to do another one. I pick up anything in step 10. I just had a sponsee call me last night. She, I've been sponsoring her for over 25 years, and on her A step list, she had one person that was a no-never. She was never going to make an amend. And she told me very recently that she's now willing to make an amend. So she called me to talk about it. And in talking about the whole thing, she said, you know, I've had so many more revelations and understandings and experiences and insights since I did the 4-step like 30 years ago or whenever it was. She said, I think I'd like to do another 4-step before I do that A step. So I said, okay, you know, that's fine. We can do that. Okay, 5 minutes for questions. The end.
Thank you, Patricia.
You're welcome.
Now, if you have a question, brief one, go ahead and raise your hand. We'll bring you the microphone. Who wants to get us started?
Anybody on Zoom?
Anybody on Zoom? If you can hear me, does anybody on Zoom have a question?
I'll ask a question.
All right. Thank you.
No way.
Hi, everyone. Gretchen, alcoholic.
Hi, Gretchen.
They all look at me. So my question is, you talked about doing the columns. Mm-hmm. And what I was taught, and I'm just wondering if this is how you suggest to the women you work with, in working those columns, what is the relevance of working top to bottom and then go over to the next column versus going straight across?
Yeah, I think that's what's suggested, is that you go down and list all your resentments first. Because if you list your resentments and then try to go across the row, you get so tied up in, you know, what you did, what they did, the problems. So they say, just don't even forget about column 3, 4, and 5. Just list everything in column 1 and then go back and do the row. Yeah, that's true.
Great, thank you. One other question.
Sure.
Because I find that this happens often as well. I'm going to bring up that dirty word, sex. Do you find that as you're working with somebody through the 4-step or even through your own experience, that was something that you kind of pushed aside for a period of time? And how do you help well, women, because you work with women, how do you help women become more comfortable with looking at that?
Yeah, I did not push it aside personally, because a lot of it was alcohol related, and I find that's kind of a common experience. And my sponsor shared a lot with me, and so I was very comfortable sharing with her. Either that, or I didn't do anything that was too bad, so that's why I put it in there. But I think it's probably more the latter. I think I was just, you know, alcohol-fueled. I said last week that one of the reasons I drank was alcohol made me very friendly. And there was a code there that you guys didn't get, but... Because it's on tape.
Hi, my name's Lori, and I appreciate all of that you said. And you, I thought it was great that you presented a few different ways of doing the fourth and fifth step. And the seven questions, I hadn't heard that one. I want to know if you think that that's an adequate and way to do a fourth and fifth, and would you allow someone to do that with you?
Yeah, I sure would. Because if you dissect each question, it's the same. It's really the same crapola, you know, as in the columns. I actually think it's a little bit better, because sometimes it's a little clearer, you know, than the way the big book did it. And if it's good enough for Clancy, it's good enough for me.
Any other questions?
Leslie.
Thank you so much, Patricia. I'm Leslie Alcoholic, and I really love the clarity you bring to the topics so far.
Thank you.
Fantastic. But my question was this. You know, you had talked about this fifth step with the priest, mm-hmm. and I did one, and it was a wonderful experience. So how did that turn out in the end? You know, you talked about fretting all ahead of time, but I don't know the rest of the story.
Yeah, it actually turned out very, very well. It was just the anxiety leading up to it. And I was focusing on the externals, where, when, whose office, you know, all of that. But it turned out to be a wonderful experience. And I felt like I had gone to confession a little bit, you know. So from that viewpoint, it was really good. But if I ever did that again, I would not wait 2 weeks from when we set it up to when we did it. That was too long to have it run around in my head. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much, everybody. Thank you, Kevin.
So next week, if you come back, Patricia will be discussing steps 6 and 7. Be here for that. Do we have any other announcements for membership?
My name's Cindy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Cindy.
Next Wednesday night at the Young at Heart group meeting at the Alkaline Club, 7 o'clock, the speaker will be Tony A.
Any other announcements? If not, feel free to stick around for a few minutes.